ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our first of the month live Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over shortwave radio station WWCR on both transmitter 3, 4.840 megahertz, and transmitter 4, 5.890 megahertz, and also shortwave radio station WBCQ, 7.490 megahertz. Both of those stations have an internet link where you can listen live, or you can go to our Kingdom Identity Ministries website, kingidentity.com, go to the radio page, and you can click on links there. Our race is not only having problems battling the Antichrist in this country, but worldwide. It's a fight of the children of light versus the children of darkness, and perhaps one place in the world that the results have been most severe is South Africa. My guest for this Sunday's program is a man who heads the civil defense organization, Duitlanders, dedicated to the protection of Christian Afrikaners in South Africa during times of civil war. Mr. Simon Roach, I'd like to welcome you to the broadcast.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you for having me.
And good evening to your listeners. Well, we're happy to have you. Why don't you start by giving some history of South Africa, the current state of affairs there, and then some information on your organization and what you're trying to achieve.
Thank you very much, Mike. I'll begin with the last question first, if you don't mind. Our organization, as you said, is called Suitlanders. It is the world's largest non-state-owned civil defense organization. We are constituted as a civil defense organization under international law, not only, but specifically, the protocols additional to the Geneva Conventions, which provide for civil defense organizations to be founded by ethnic groups in the event of armed conflict that threatens them. And we, Suitlanders, are a group of people in South Africa who have been preparing for a civil war in South Africa for quite some time. To go back to your first question, history of South Africa, the Suitlanders is constituted of, by, and for the Afrikaner Boer people of South Africa, the people, the white people of South Africa, who are renowned, I suppose, in the world, or notorious in the modern world for being the people who implemented apartheid. So we were, for many years, the ruling class, as it were, in South Africa. We're a people that found their way to South Africa, beginning on the 6th of April, 1652. On the 6th of April, 1652, the first permanent settlement of white Europeans in South Africa was founded. So we've been there a considerable period of time. When the first white people arrived in South Africa at the Cape of Good Hope, modern-day Cape Town, very interestingly, they didn't find any black people there, and it was fully 125 years before the white people came across the first black people as you and I would know them. And I mention that, Mike, because I think it'll be interesting for your listeners to discover something which is probably not what they expected of South Africa. The first white people at the Cape of Good Hope came across little groups of scattered little family groups of Aboriginal people only, tiny, frail, small little people known as Bushmen and Hottentots, although the correct scientific name for them is the Khoisan people. But they're the people of the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy, the movie where the Coke bottle drops out of the aeroplane and lands on the man's head. The very small, little, frail, primitive people. And as I say, it took 125 years before the whites met proper black people. And over time, we built a fantastic society, fantastic economy. There was a time in my own lifetime where it cost $2 to buy one of our rand, one of our currency. And of course, in 1994, the African National Congress, with the help of the world, the United Nations, with the assistance of tremendous sanctions, with the immense support of Soviet Russia and the Chinese communists, eventually prevailed against our people and implemented multiracial democracy under Nelson Mandela. Now, this was a very sore point for us because we like to think of ourselves as conservative Christians, not necessarily good Christians. As a people, we are not flawless people. We can be a little bit brash and we do live life to the full, but we are a people that has always had a very almost primitive association with our God. The Afrikaner Boer people of South Africa were an amalgamation, or are an amalgamation, of three very interesting groups from Europe. Firstly, Dutch Calvinists, at a time when, as James H. Michener, the renowned American author, put it, the Dutch were the most religious people in Europe. And they founded this new place in the Cape of Good Hope, and they were joined after a few years by Huguenots, who happened to be French. The Huguenots came as Huguenots to escape persecution in Europe. They didn't come as Frenchmen. And they were then joined by Lutheran soldiers who were demobilized after the 30 Years' War. And so they came as Lutherans, not as Germans. And that is indicative of the background, the history, the deep, deep connection that our people have in our roots to our Christian faith.
I was going to say that's very similar to the pilgrims in this country.
Yes, yes, it is. And it's something that we've never quite lost. Never, no matter what we've been through, our people have maintained that identity, core identity as Christian Protestants. Many parts of South Africa, for example, our largest river is called the Orange River, and it's named for the House of Orange, who were the champions of Protestantism once upon a time. And that gives you some sort of clue.
What's the current state of affairs since apartheid was ended?
Well, Mike, this is a very, very sad story at the moment. Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress, which, by the way, is not an independent organization. The African National Congress, unbeknownst to most people in the world, is in fact only one leg of what is known as the Tripartite Alliance Organization, which is composed of, and has always been composed of, the South African Communist Party, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, which is sort of a Marxist party, and the ANC, the African National Congress. So in the intervening 23 years since Nelson Mandela's ANC won the first multiracial elections on the 27th of April 1994, over 74,000 white people have been murdered by black people. And to give your listeners a sense of perspective, that means that any white person, including a 1-year-old girl or a 90-year-old granny, stands a 1,370% greater chance of being murdered by a black person than any American stands of ever being murdered. It's an absolute phenomenon. On top of that, our country's economy has declined drastically, and about 3 months ago, the ratings agencies, Moody's, Fitch and Standard & Poor's, downgraded South Africa's sovereign bonds to junk status. On top of that, so we have this massive level of crime and violence against white people, and we have an economy that is in a great deal of trouble. Black leaders have in recent years, particularly the last year, since August of 2016, begun speaking openly of a civil war against white people. We are now at the point where we know that we are in a great deal of trouble. This has taken 23 years, but it's been on the cards for a long time. We expect this war to begin fairly soon. Many black leaders are talking about it, talking openly about the slaughter of all whites. To quote one man who spoke, a very, very influential politician, on the 7th of November last year, on the 10th of April this year, a very influential politician, black politician, said that in 5 years there will be no more conservative whites in South Africa. On the 21st, if I'm not mistaken, it was Friday, the 21st of April, another very influential black politician spoke about how the blacks are now going to get at the whites. 4 Mondays ago, the leader of the African National Congress's armed wing, so that is the armed wing of the ANC political party, not our army or military or anything like that, said it is now time for blacks to join training camps to train to fight the whites in a civil war. I think that's a synopsis. I hope that I've answered your question well.
Yes, and is not the movie, TV, media, schools, another part of the establishment encouraging this type of thing? The same people that run it in this country run it down there. Is that not correct?
Yes, you know, Mike, I'll answer your question slightly obliquely, if I may. The reason why we're in the USA is to raise funds for our cause, which we can speak about later. As I mentioned to you previously, the unintended benefit of this tour has been the level of exposure that we've obtained, which is absolutely tremendous. It's hitherto unknown because the media is not reporting what's happening in South Africa. You know, Mike, at the moment, any white person stands almost half, not quite half the chance of being murdered by a black person that an American soldier in Vietnam stood of dying. In other words, it is almost half as dangerous for a 3-year-old white girl to live and breathe as it was for an American soldier to be on the front lines of the conflict in Southeast Asia. Now, if that was happening anywhere else in the world, it would be front page news on CNN, ABC, NBC, BBC in Britain, TV Monde in France, and so on and so forth. But this matter is not being reported. And that's because it's not in the interests of the global elites to report this matter, firstly. And secondly, because it will make absolute fools of them, after telling the world for 40 years, almost ramming it down the throats of the West, because this message is for the West, or it was for the West. It certainly wasn't a big issue in Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan. The global mainstream media needed Americans, Canadians, Europeans, and Australians to believe that white South Africans were bad. Now, they can't very well start saying that the new South African Rainbow Nation, as it's known, is a failure, because they'll look either like fools or layers. I know I've answered your question indirectly, but I hope that it suffices.
Certainly, you've got a lot of area to cover tonight. But the white people of South Africa were prosperous at one time, as you mentioned, but many of them are now living in squatter camps, aren't they?
Yes, that's correct. We are a population of about 4.7 million people in a country of about 55 to 56 million. So that means that we constitute something like 8.5% of the population. That is 1 in 12. So for every one white person, there are 11 non-white people. And we have about 320,000. This is the minimum number. It could be higher. Many charities claim that it is higher. But let's be conservative and give the liberals and the communists the benefit of the doubt and say that the number of white people in what we call squatter camps, shanty towns, is only 320,000. Just imagine, 320,000 out of 4.7 million. It's a massive, massive proportion by any global standards.
Of course, your organization is intended to help the people of South Africa, but I'm going to let you give your address here in a minute and how people can contact you. But at the top of the hour, I forgot to give our call-in number. If anybody would like to make comments or ask questions tonight, they can call our toll-free number, 877-924-7722. 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAWS-RACE. For our foreign listeners who can't use toll-free numbers, you can call 678-949-5091. That will also work in the U.S. Simon, why don't you give some contact information for you and your organization?
Thank you very much, Mike. Our organization is called Suidlanders, that is spelled S-U-I-D-L-A-N-D-E-R-S. So, Suidlanders, if you like. And our website is suidlanders.org. It's a fantastic website, really, really user-friendly, very interesting, informative website. We get compliments about it all of the time, so I invite your listeners to go and have a look at that. And if anybody is interested in donating to us, which is the purpose of our tour, is really to plead with Americans to donate money which we are using for the purchase of vital necessities for civilian non-combatants. We are not in the USA to collect money for guns and ammunition. We are a civil defense organization devoted to the protection of women and children, unarmed non-combatants in civil war. So we're here to raise funds for blankets, medicine, diesel fuel, and so on. If people would like to donate, they should look in the bottom right-hand corner of the homepage of that website, suidlanders.org, where they will find a PayPal link, and we will be most grateful for any contribution. It will be very, very gratefully received.
Well, thank you. I'll give you an opportunity to repeat that contact information at the end of the broadcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the leadership and organization structure of your organization?
Our organization was founded by a man called Gustav Müller almost 20 years ago originally, but it wasn't in its present form. You could say that for 11 years, we've been functioning in our present form, which is as a civil defense initiative. And Gustav Müller's background was that he was in the South African Defense Force prior to 1994, and he received extensive training and experience in the field of military intelligence. So he is a specialist in scenario planning and risk analysis, and that's why we have been head and shoulders the organization in South Africa which has been most accurately able to predict the developments in South Africa over recent years. You know, we've known well in advance because we have the knowledge and skills to do scenario planning and risk analysis. The organization has a number of senior leaders who are elder Christians, and then we have a sort of an operational level, and I am the head of one portion of that. I'm the head of the HQ for the implementation of the civil defense plan in the event of civil war. So in other words, it's kind of like a shadow HQ, if you like. It's not how we run our organization right now. So our organization is very much characterized by a conservative Christian ethos, a very Calvinist, old-fashioned, Bible-believing way of looking at our relationship with God and our faith. We are people who set a lot of store by the Old Testament. We believe that the Old Testament was not completely usurped by the New Testament, and we believe that many parts of the Old Testament are extremely valid and relevant and should be heeded. And that, I think, certainly in our minds, would answer your question about leadership. Our leadership is very much about Christian faith, about providing leadership in Christ for an embattled people.
I know your operation manual is very thorough and deals with a lot of different problems. Would you like to comment on both the spiritual and defense aspects of the organization?
Yes. The spiritual aspect of the organization is of paramount importance. Anybody, any one of your listeners who perhaps becomes fascinated by this subject and chooses to come out to South Africa to have a look at our operation will immediately see that although we are not, how can I put this, very charismatic Christians, we are people who pray when we eat, and we're people who pray before every meeting. And our leadership, particularly Mr. Gustav Müller, is always very keen to tell people, we don't do this because it's a custom. We don't do it because it's a tradition. We do it because it's the right thing to do. Everything that we do is done in Christ, even if we ourselves are not perfect as individuals. So the spiritual aspect of our organization is of absolutely paramount importance. The organizational planning, implementational, operational aspect of our organization can be found in the manual to which you referred. And if any of your listeners are interested in receiving a copy of that manual, which is about a 250-page summary or overview of our entire operational plan, all that they have to do is send me an email, and I'll gladly send them a copy back. My email address is 8K. It's short for headquarters in our language, HK at Suidlanders, S-U-I-D, Landers, .co.za. You know, Mike, our plan is to get as many white people out of the cities and into a redoubt as possible. This is clearly going to be a very, very difficult thing to do, because in the event of a civil war, all that our foes have to do to hinder the implementation of our plan is cut off escape routes, fundamentally. However, we know that the worst thing that we could do is remain in our houses in the scattered pockets of small numbers of white people that there are across South Africa. South Africa is not quite, it's almost double the size of Texas. So it's not a small country. It's by no means as big as Canada and the USA and Russia, these massive countries of the world. But we are bigger than the vast majority of countries. And 4.5 million or 4.7 million white people are scattered over the length and breadth of our country. So in the event of a race-based civil war, this civil war that the black leaders are promising us, we would stand no chance if we stood our ground in teeny tiny little pockets, and we have to do whatever we can to create a sort of a critical mass. And therefore, we're left with no choice but to endeavor to get as many people from all across South Africa via the safest possible routes to certain safe havens, if you like. Our people train week in and week out in various aspects of civil defense, whether it be firefighting or medicine or controlling refugees or communication. We have a high-frequency radio network which covers the whole of South Africa, every square inch. And that will be very much employed in guiding the streams of refugees from the suburbs and cities and so on into little rivers towards these safe havens. Our organization has just short of 100,000 members, not quite 100,000 members, and they are in little groups of 10. So all across South Africa, we have little arrangements that we call groups, and a group is 10 families. 10 groups comprises a region. 10 regions comprise what we call a conference. 10 conferences comprise what we call a province, and we have 10 provinces, I beg your pardon, 27 provinces across South Africa. So some of the provinces are very strong, they have many members, and they're very well prepared. In certain areas of South Africa, which are renowned for the number of liberal, modern whites, our organization is relatively weak, and we have few groups and not many members. But the idea is, in the event of this civil war, to get as many people as possible on the road as quickly as possible before things get out of hand to areas where they can feasibly defend themselves under international law.
It kind of brings up another question, though. I hate to admit it, but there's many people in our race that are undesirables or infiltrators and have caused a lot of problems. They're not assets to an organization. What do you do concerning security screening?
It's very, very difficult for us to screen people. Sometimes we know that people are miscreants, for want of a better word, or spies, traitors, quislings. And then, of course, we keep them at arm's length. But we are absolutely saturated with spies. You can imagine that an all-white organization in the modern South Africa is a thorn in the side of the African National Congress government. It drives them mad that there can be such an organization, particularly one that is preparing peacefully and lawfully for a civil war. And the government spends vast sums of money on spies to infiltrate our organization. So what we've done to sort of like a voodoo move to counter that is to be absolutely transparent. We are probably the least secret organization in the world. We make absolutely everything public so that we can sort of wrong-foot them. And it works to our advantage. It also permits us to, how can I put this, to remain in the good graces of international law. You know, you can imagine for yourself, Mike, how it drives the ruling elites mad that we have, by the grace of God, been able to get this thing right. And from time to time, we get a very hard time from these guys. But we just keep plugging away, doing the right thing in a lawful way, and we make it very, very public that what we're doing, so that people can't accuse us of some sort of insurrectionism or sedition or so on.
Well, wisdom is certainly an asset that the Bible talks about. It saves a lot of problems. We had a listener online ask a question. They asked if you think it's a coincidence the racial tensions are increasing worldwide at the same time.
No, we don't, Mike. You know, we don't speak very much of we believe that our ultimate war is going to be with fellow white people. We don't speak about it, though, because it begins to sound conspiratorial, and at some level we have to ensure that our message is easily received and understood by our people. So we do focus on that we are heading towards a race-based civil war, as these black leaders keep on promising us. However, we are not naive or ignorant. We're aware of where these problems stem from. We are aware of how this crisis of white people around the world has been engineered simultaneously. So we're conscious that the ultimate enemy is what a very famous prophet in our culture, a man, I don't know if you're aware of this, but a man who predicted the existence of Donald Trump 100 years ago, called the Doringbos. This famous prophet said that the forces against us, the Masonic / internationalist / certain churches / certain religions that are devoted to the destruction of our people, are in collusion with global capital and global media, are called the Doringbos in his language, the thorn bush that antagonizes the man walking through the savannas of South Africa, if you appreciate the metaphor there.
Was that, I'm sure I'm going to slaughter this name, but was that Nicholas von Rensburg gave a number of prophecies that came to pass?
Nicholas von Rensburg, yes. He made something like 740 prophecies, and over 400 of them seem quite obviously to have come to pass. He said that we would be confronted by a terrible, terrible, terrible civil war. And he gave this prophecy almost exactly 100 years ago. He said he made this prophecy. He had tremendous credibility at the time. He was initially received with a great deal of skepticism, as you might imagine, because he was a prophet amongst Calvinists. And Calvinists are hesitant when it comes to that sort of thing. But over time, he established an impeccable reputation. So when he prophesied that the Boer people would face a terrible final conflict, people believed him. And one of his friends said to him, "Look, it's well and good that you make these prophecies, but you can't make a prophecy like that. That's a terrible thing to say, and it's going to frighten people. And the very least that you could do is to give some indications of what we might do to protect ourselves, give some indications of when this thing might happen and how it might happen." And this chappy, the second party, his friend, went on to say, "We should probably all move back to Europe if what you say is going to happen to us here in Africa." And Nicholas von Rensburg said to him, "No, brother, it will be far, far worse for the people of Europe." He went on to say that the time of these events will be shortly after a sudden wave of black and brown-skinned migrants into Europe. He said it will be after a time when the reins of leadership of the USA are held by a black boy. He said this black boy will disorientate the strength and the virility, the might and the power of the USA, and that a white man would come along and take the reins of leadership away from this black boy. He went on to say that this white man would have a place, Kale Kreif, a place, Kale Kreif, which means hair resembling a wig. He went on to say that the man would have a stern gaze. And he said that there would be a tremendous global conflict that would begin somewhere in the region of Syria. I'm not saying Syria, I'm saying somewhere in the region of Syria, somewhere in the old Ottoman Empire, which was, of course, Lebanon, Palestine, Syria, Iraq, Western Persia, that is to say Western Iran, and Turkey. Those were the places that made up the Ottoman Empire at the time that he made this prophecy. He said, this was during World War One, he said that we are in the time of the great haystack, whose fires are engulfing the world. He said the world would know a second great haystack, whose fires would engulf the world. And he said it would be, it would involve a great German stone that rolled across Europe and eventually toppled over and broke into two pieces, you know, obviously representing two Germanies, this unified entity being broken in half. He said that these events, which you and I have been discussing, Mike, would then occur in the time of the third great haystack, whose fires would engulf the whole world. And he spoke at some length about the role of the USA and Russia in those events. And he said it will be at that time that in South Africa, a black man who is deemed a saint will become the first black ruler on the throne of South Africa. Now, that cost him immense credibility. When he gave that prophecy, many people discarded him at once because he was obviously suggesting something which in most people's minds would never happen, namely that South Africa, or for that matter, any country in Africa, would have independence, that it would be black-ruled. However, as, of course, the African National Congress took over in South Africa, people flocked back to these prophecies. And he went on to say that this first black ruler on the throne of South Africa would be deemed a saint by the world, so much so that when he died, he would be placed in a glass coffin and he would lie in state for 7 days. And then when he was buried, dignitaries would come from all over the world to pay their respect. Now, of course, in 1917, that was hocus pocus. It was absolute nonsense. Nobody imagined that there would ever be a time when some kind of black potentate would die and the great dignitaries of the world would come and pay their respects. You know, the blacks were deemed savages who would never be capable of running any country, would never have independence, would never come out from under the yoke of colonialism. And so he was scoffed at for that and ostracized. But, of course, it has come true.
Yes, it's amazing that he would make these prophecies a century ago. I just read today that the state of Illinois and here in the U.S. is going to make a Barack Obama holiday.
Really?
It's sickening. I'd like to know if you do cooperate, does your organization, with the U.S. and other countries who are in similar situations or at least dire situations?
Well, Mike, we don't cooperate in the sense that we have any sort of formal arrangement with organizations in the USA. However, I've now been in the USA for 5 months, and I've had the great privilege of being able to travel the length and the breadth of the USA. I've driven over 23,000 miles. That excludes flights. That's just travel by car. And I've met many wonderful, wonderful, good, decent Christian Americans. And, of course, we have forged some links. They're not very high-level links. They don't have great strategic value. But they are immensely heartwarming to us. I'm positive that in years to come, those links will be strengthened more and more and more, particularly as the right wing of the USA recovers its voice. You know, having been oppressed for so long, it has raised its head above the parapet with the arrival of Donald Trump. Hopefully, the right wing of the USA will continue to find its voice, and they will continue to find solidarity in Jesus Christ, because ultimately, there has to be a common denominator. At the end of the day, there has to be a common denominator, or there will never be solidarity. So hopefully, over time, as these organizations mature and improve, we'll be able to do some sort of reciprocal stuff with them, as people who are devoted to the interests of the white peoples of the world.
Of course, there's a spiritual basis to all that's happening to us, both on the positive side and on the negative side. If somebody would like to contact you, I'm going to let you give your contact information again. Perhaps they can arrange some meetings or something in their area. And if somebody would like to call tonight and ask a question or make a comment, they can call our toll-free number, 877-924-7722. 877-924-7722, 877-YAWS-RACE, or they can dial directly at 678-949-5091. Why don't you give us your contact information again, and I know you're trying to raise some funds. About how much is needed to achieve at least the beginning of what your purpose is?
Mike, thank you very much for permitting the opportunity to speak candidly about this thing. It's sensitive, and we're a proud people. We're not accustomed to begging, but matters are so dire in South Africa now with the daily, almost daily rape of young babies by grown men and the slaughter of farmers' wives on their farms that we have to get drastic, and so we've come to the USA to raise funds. We have a comprehensive plan which is sketched in our manual, as you and I discussed earlier on. For the implementation of that plan, for between 800,000 and a million people, we require about $10 million, which is peanuts really, because peanuts relatively speaking, because of course we're basically preparing a society for people in conditions of conflict. Our budget is constructed in South African rands, that's our currency, and when you reconvert that currency to dollars, then the amount is, it's just over, let's say, $9 million. So we use the $10 million as a round number. We are nowhere near that amount. We've not even made a dent in it. We haven't raised a fraction of that figure, but we're going to keep on soldiering on in faith. And if the Lord wills that we should be able to raise the money for us to lay the foundations of this entire emergency plan, then we will do it. If he doesn't will it, then it won't happen. And I'm sure that he has a good reason for it. But it's up to us to make the effort, and that's what we will continue to do.
Well, once again, go ahead and give your contact information and how to donate to your organization.
The website is suidlanders.org, SUIDLANDERS.org. And if anybody would like to make a donation, they can do so through that very same website. In the bottom right-hand corner of the homepage is a PayPal link. It's very easy to use. It's very effective. And thousands of people across the USA have used it until now. So people needn't worry about it being difficult or tricky or anything like that. PayPal link, and the donations come through to South Africa.
And if somebody would like to set up a meeting in this country with you, how can they contact you?
Mike, they may contact me by telephone, 386. This is a USA number, obviously, 386-274-8199. 386-274-8199, or they may send me an email to hk@suidlanders.co.za. So the website's suffix is .org, but the suffix for my email address is .co.za.
I was very disappointed when the South Africans voted away their own Christian heritage and sovereignty, especially after seeing what happened to Rhodesia. Are the majority of white people in South Africa at least somewhat aware of what's really going on, or are they just kind of going along with the establishment propaganda?
Many, many people, many white people in South Africa are continuing to go along with the establishment propaganda, but they are waking up at a rapid rate. There was a time when people like I am represented just about 10% of the population. You know, very few of us had held true to our conservative convictions. And indeed, for many years, I didn't, Mike. I was one of those people who thought that it would be a good thing to give everybody a chance in the sun, you know, to give everybody, you know, equal opportunity to make the most of South Africa. But it quickly became apparent that the African National Congress government was rotten to the bone. And so many of us have woken up. However, people should remember that we were subjected to the most intense barrage of cultural Marxist propaganda in the history of the world. We had almost universal sanctions, economic sanctions against South Africa. We had sporting sanctions against us, and we were being bombarded day and night by our liberal media with the message that we are bad and that we're guilty and that black people are victims and that the African National Congress is a benevolent or an altruistic organization and that Nelson Mandela, he of the beautiful smile, is a benevolent man. And eventually we began to doubt ourselves. You know, we held out. We were the last of the last to hold out against communism on our borders. Nobody did it as well as we did. We fought 9 countries simultaneously for almost 30 years, and that is not including the overwhelming majority of black people inside our borders. So with the sanctions and with this deluge of propaganda, we eventually began to think, gee, we must be wrong. We have to be wrong. They keep telling us we're wrong, and we capitulated, and what a mistake it was.
Well, people need to realize that there is a genuine racial difference, and until they admit it, we're not going to solve any problems. That goes for this country. I'm sure you're starting to wake up in South Africa as people as a whole, and everywhere else our race lives on the planet. We're losing population.
Yes.
Now, of course, this ministry explains the racial difference from a spiritual standpoint, but it should be obvious just by observation.
It should be obvious by observation. You're correct.
I'm wondering if you have press laws similar to Germany and Canada and some of the other countries that prevent you from free speech speaking on something like this.
Yes, Mike, very much so. In fact, liberals and the blacks and our media and our elite and our establishment, call them all whatever you like. We all know who we're talking about. Proudly tout our constitution as the most liberal constitution in the world. Now, you know exactly what that means. That means that it's actually not liberal at all in the sense of liberated or free. Far from it. We're not allowed to say this and we're not allowed to say that. Our laws are some of the stiffest in the world.
And I assume that many of our race feel that oppression, that sometimes out of fear they will not take any action to counter it.
Well, that's it. And in a sense, that's a good thing, in as much as it means that there are many white people in South Africa who have not demonstrated yet that they've woken up, who are not participating in their people's interests, which is a bad thing, but nevertheless, it implies that when the crisis erupts, we will get an unexpected influx of people who have been, for the sake of their jobs, the sake of their families. It's very easy to lose your job in South Africa if you say anything that can be remotely construed as racist. And there are many examples of very high-powered white people losing their jobs because they've sent a tweet or a WhatsApp or a text message saying that people on the beaches, for example, on the coast in summertime are behaving like barbarians, or some sort of comment like that, you know, is immediately construed as, well, he's saying that only the black people are behaving like barbarians. He must lose his job at the bank, and many examples of this. But as I say, implicit in that is that we will find supporters in unexpected quarters once there is nothing left to lose.
What are the judges like in South Africa? Are there still some that have been retained from the apartheid era, or have they all been replaced, or many of them been replaced? And
yes, the overwhelming majority of the old guard, for want of a better word, has been replaced. Whether it be judges, policemen, soldiers,
railway workers, postal workers, electricity supply commission. You know, our electrical grid is a national endeavor, as is our railways. Then neither of them are privatized. So the judicial system is very much skewed in favor of this crazy ultra-liberal constitution. There are some judges remaining who have got their heads screwed on properly, but they're obviously constrained by the letter of the law.
Within your organization, after civil war hits, do you have a judicial system and other types of structure that will continue to maintain society?
Yes. Mike, our national emergency plan is utterly comprehensive. It covers sewerage systems, water, food, that is to say the planting of crops, the gathering in of food, the storage of it, the distribution, medical services, logistical services, and to come to your point, an entire judicial solution from magistrates, in other words, our equivalent to judges, magistrates, prosecutors, policing service, absolutely everything is catered for in the National Emergency Plan, as people can read if they send me an email requesting a copy of it.
Well, that's great. I like to see good planning and common sense leadership.
Yes.
We have probably about 4 minutes left. Would you like to make some concluding remarks, something that you haven't covered in these last few minutes?
Thanks, Mike. Yes, please. If anybody is interested, there is a website in the USA called SouthAfricaSOS.org, which is run by a patriot from Southern California by the name of Mr. Tom Bevington. And he is presently working with a man from Pensacola, Florida, on an initiative to purchase heirloom seeds, in other words, non-Monsanto seeds, seeds whose crops can be used for seeds again. And if anybody is interested in that, if anybody is interested in making a donation in that form, in other words, through the system, is very easy to use, very, very easy to use. They in donating money, will contribute to the purchase of seeds, which we will place into storage for crops in a time of crisis, because we obviously won't be buying the one-off crop Monsanto seeds at that time. And as I say, this initiative has been driven from Florida, Pensacola, Florida, and Southern California. So that's a website that people might want to look at, SouthAfricaSOS.org.
Well, I think we need some organization like that in this country, because a lot of the people are asleep and their minds are on sports and other things that are of no real value. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, it's the spiritual behind everything that we're doing. It's for the sake of our Heavenly Father and His kingdom.
There are no two ways about it, Mike. This is a war in the heavenlies. We are just pawns in the ground, on the ground, I should say, fighting what is ultimately a war against Satan. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that's true. Why don't you give your contact information one more time, and then we're going to have to close this broadcast, and our contact information for this ministry will be given in the closing announcement.
Right. My telephone number is a USA number, 386-274-8199. My email address is hk@suidlanders.co.za. hk@suidlanders.co.za. Our website, which is the portal for donations, is suidlanders.org. And if anybody would like to visit the website that is supporting us here in the USA very passionately, it is SouthAfricaSOS.org.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being on the broadcast tonight. There's a lot of information that's very informative and interesting, and I'd urge our audience to contact you and follow up on this. It's important to help our brethren in South Africa and all over the world and to wake up our people in this country. As Dr. Swift used to say, tell it, tell it, tell it. That's the only way we're going to get the word out.
Well, I'd like to thank you. Thank you, Mike. Good night and God bless.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com, type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.